I don't think it's working. Is it working?
Well, the light is on.
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. All right. Hi, everybody. So I would like to talk about spin glass reflection of the decode and transition for space-time codes. I will explain later what I mean by space-time codes. So here is a brief outline of my talk. So basically, the main message of my talk is that we can map an arbitrary quantum error-correcting code to a Wegener model, and then the decoding transition would correspond to the transition in such a Wegener model. I will show how we could introduce an order parameter associated with such a Wegener model, and I will also discuss the more complicated case, as Leonid mentioned, when we have errors in syndrome measurements, and I will show that in this case, we could also do such mapping to Wegener models. And in particular, in this case, I could associate the error correcting problem to the problem of error correction in some code, which I call space-time code, which basically represents layers of the initial quantum error correcting code, basically joined together into a larger code. And finally, if I have time, I will also talk about mapping of the space-time codes to quantum models. So during my talk, I will use heavily the mapping of everything to binary matrices. So then for classical codes, the error correction is that we send a message, then we receive a message, then we multiply this message with the parity, with the parity check matrix, and that tells us how to correct the error that happened in the classical code. In the quantum code, we could also do mapping of the Pauli operators to binary strings, where the string has X component and Z component. And here, how one could map 513 code to such binary representation. And basically here, a lot of things can be thought in a way similar to classical error correction. In particular, after we did this mapping, we could also map errors to binary strings, and in particular, the result of syndrome measurements can also be handled in the same way by simply doing matrix multiplication, where multiplication is slightly more similar because it's a twisted product, but it's fairly similar. We could also think of logical operators as binary strings and use binary representation in order to calculate the distance of our code. So, but of course, the main subject of this conference is LDPC code, and those were largely inspired by classical LDPC codes, and those are basically among the best codes for classical error correction, and probably the most famous example is the Gallagher code. And for such codes, you generate parity check matrix in the following form. First, you take first block matrix in such organized structure where you put one after another in the following manner, then all other blocks in this matrix are generated by random permutations of columns in such matrices. In the end, you get a pseudo-random matrix which has a regular structure. In particular, each row has a fixed number of ones, and each column also has a fixed number of ones. So, and basically, by that, you can actually generate codes with good classical error correcting properties, and the weight of stabilizer generate, or the weight of parity check matrix rows and columns will be fixed. So inspired by that, we would like to construct similar codes for quantum systems. And here, actually, Tori code has been known for quite some time, and that's actually the simplest example of quantum LDPC error correcting code. So unfortunately, because the Tori code is a local code, it has a limitation, and in particular, it was estimated in this paper that it would require a huge number of qubits for realization of a quantum computer. And basically, the reason for that is this bound on the number of encoded qubits k and on the distance d, which k times d squared has to be of the order of number of used qubits. So basically, because of this bound, you cannot do better than this bound. Then one of the solutions that was proposed was to use LDPC codes, quantum LDPC codes, and particularly if you could find such codes with a finite rate, then it was shown that then we could, in principle, create a quantum computer with linear overhead. And we also showed that under some conditions on the distance of such codes, if it grows fast enough, then actually the threshold of such codes will exist, which means that in principle we could store information in such a code with linear with linear rate. And there are some examples of such codes. One of the examples is hypergraph product codes. And in particular, for such codes, you get a finite rate and you get distance as scale square root of block lengths. In particular, here, I plotted one of some of such codes. And in particular, the first number tells us the weight of columns in the parity check matrix, and the second number tells the weight of rows in the parity check matrix. And as you can see from this graph, it indeed has a finite rate and distance scaling a square root of the block lengths. So there are other constructions. In particular, you can also construct LDPC codes on hyperbolic surfaces, and those have worse scaling for distance, but it's still growing distance. And the rate is finite. Then there are some improvements where basically you can also construct 4D hyperbolic codes where you can get block lengths to some power epsilon. And basically all this distance scaling would be, according to result that we obtained, would be sufficient in order to have finite threshold for such codes. So basically we could in principle put in information and safely store it in this code. Of course, the problem is will we be also able to extract this information from such codes? And then there is a problem of decoding, which was partially addressed and which is also a question under study. So, but the subject that I will address in this code, this talk is the existence of the threshold. So in order to establish a threshold, it turns out to be sometimes useful or convenient to map the error correcting problems to a statistical problem, or to map the problem of appearance of errors in our code to a statistical problem. And it is well known that Tori code maps to Eisen model, where in which we can have ordered phase and disordered phase. Of course, with Tori code, the situation is more difficult, and we would need to map to random bond Eisen model, where the phase diagram that we already have seen today in several talks would be like this, where this axis represents the probability of flipped bond, and this is temperature, and basically then the code properties can be extracted by studying the Nishimori line of this phase diagram. So I'm claiming that actually we could take arbitrary quantum error correcting code described by, for example, such parity check matrix, binary parity check matrix, and we could map it to Wegener model. The Wegener model is defined in the following way, where we calculate such energy, which basically consists, which in a way is a generalization of an Eisen model, where we have some coefficients IB that contribute to the strength of each bond, and then there is RB, which basically a combination of some spins. And theta is a general matrix, general binary matrix. So basically the columns of this theta matrix will define how spins interact with each other. So these columns basically will correspond to bonds, and the ones present here will correspond to interacting spins, and the rows basically will correspond to spins. So of course, in order to have this analysis, we would need to suppose a very simple error model. In particular here, I suppose that X and Z errors happen with the same fixed probability, and they happen independently. So then this mapping, Leonid already talked about it, but so I will repeat it very briefly. So then we could actually calculate the probability of some error to happen, which basically probability P per qubit to the power of weight of the error times 1 minus p to the remaining qubits. Then, of course, for quantum error correction, what is of interest is the probability of the whole equivalence class of some error, and that can be formed, that can be calculated by calculating this sum, where basically this sigma times h shifts all errors to equivalent ones. Here I also added c, which is the code word, and basically this would define for us all possible equivalence classes corresponding to some error e. So then, of course, the maximum likelihood decoder will work in a way that it will pick up, as an error correction procedure, it will pick up the equivalence class, which would be the maximal among these ones. But what's nice is that this probability is exactly equal to the partition function of the Wagner spin model. So basically, if you compare this expression where instead of matrix theta, I take h, if you compare this expression and this expression, you will notice that they are exactly the same on the Nishimori line. So that basically brings us to the conclusion that the maximum likelihood decoding in principle can be done by mapping our quantum error correcting code to a Wagner model. So basically then then P max would be actually the probability of that equivalence class that is maximum out of all equivalence classes, and this would be the one that we would need to pick up while doing maximum likelihood decoding. Then we would also need to introduce P total probability of some of all equivalence classes, where we basically sum over all code word shifts of our error. And then the decoding probability of maximum likelihood decoder can be written in the following form. So the decoding, sorry?
It's P max over P total, right?
Oh, here should be P total, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, it should be P
maximum.
E over P, P maximum over P total, yes, you're right. Yes, sorry, that's misprint. So the decoding tradition would correspond to the limit where P decoding goes to one as we increase the size of the code. It turns out that we don't necessarily need to calculate this thing on the Nishimori line, and instead we could calculate this order parameter of such a model, and basically if this kappa goes to one on the Nishimori line, that then we know that this would be equivalent to existence of a decoding tradition. So basically these two can be shown to be equal on the Nishimori line. So what we do further, we actually say that let's call this thing to be an order parameter in all phase space on our phase diagram, and potentially that's what we will be doing. We will be studying the behavior of such Wagner models with such order parameter. In principle, there could be also other order parameters or other transitions that can happen in such general models. Another interesting thing that, in principle, if we are in a decodable phase, then the free energy cost of a domain wall is divergent on the Nishimori line. So these facts basically can be established by careful analysis. So another thing is that, of course, probably I could also take a more simple case and take the case of CSS code. Then out of our quantum error correcting code, I actually get two Wagner models. One would correspond to that matrix GX, which correspond to X type stabilizer generators, and matrix GZ that corresponds to Z type stabilizer generators. So basically, just repeating what is already known, that with this mapping, if I formally repeat it for toric code, I will get Ising model. Then for hyperbolic surface codes, I will get Ising models on hyperbolic surfaces. For hypergraph product code, I get what could probably be called generalized Ising models, where instead of two spin interactions, we can get more than two spin interactions. Hypergraph product code with rotated boundaries then lead also to such generalized Ising models with rotated boundaries. So here I am simply giving a couple of examples. And the first case that I would like to consider would be local LDPC code. So of course, I can map everything, and it's a lot of things to consider. So we need to start from some simple cases. So if we have a local code, then of course we still have this limitation on the number of encoded qubit and distance. However, what we discovered by numerically analyzing some of the examples of hypergraph product codes is that the phase diagram looks basically almost indistinguishable up to the precision that we managed to achieve from that for Eisen model. So basically here, for example, this code maps to an Eisen model with four spin interactions. So basically these dots interact with each other, and all other interactions can be obtained by translations of these two. This is basically simple Tori code. And the conclusion that we draw from this is that sometimes it might be useful for some finite block lengths to use such hypergraph product code, the local hypergraph product code, for encoding information, because the code has the same threshold as Tori code, but encodes many more qubits. So here, for example, this code encodes 98 qubits. So of course, there will be a question how quickly this code reaches the threshold as we increase the block size, but in principle, it's potentially an interesting conclusion that can be drawn from here. So also such models already, even local models, contain interesting physics. So in particular, we could talk about generalized domain walls here, and in particular, we could also talk about cost of such a domain wall, which can be calculated by calculating the free energy cost of some defect. In general, we would like to characterize such system by such other parameters that I already mentioned. The ground state of such codes can be degenerate. So for example, here I'm considering a model which is only slightly more complicated than Eisen model, where here I have two body interactions, but while here I have three body interactions vertically. So then what we have is that there are these two ground states, and all linear combinations of these two ground states form four possible ground states of this model. Then we can stitch these ground states together and form the domain walls. And here is an example of one of the domain walls that can be formed here. And one difference that we often see from Eisen model is that the phase transition usually become first order when the weight of basically such interactions is larger. So then, of course, we could talk about finite rate LDPC codes. And in this case, one of the constructions that could be considered would be hypergraph product code, which was already mentioned here. It's a CSS code which is constructed from matrices H1, and instead of H2, I wrote H1 transpose. E here is a unit matrix. So basically, in this construction, the H1 matrix can be taken to correspond to the Gallagher code. I already mentioned how this thing is constructed. If furthermore I remove the linearly dependent rows, then I actually arrive at the finite rate quantum LDPC code. So then of course we can only guess what kind of phase diagram one could get for such a case. One thing is for sure is that one can prove that actually the decoding transition exists for such models. So basically, in some small region on the Nishimori line, we could guarantee that there will be an ordered phase characterized by the generalized order parameter that I introduced before. And in principle, because these are very general models, one might not even be able to talk about local order parameter here. And basically, we also know for sure that this point of transition would have to move away from this point that we used to see for Eisen model simply by considering the quantum capacity of a channel. Basically, it has to move somewhere here, but it would be interesting to find the exact diagram. So now I'm switching the gears, and basically, I would like to talk about generalizations, and here I consider, again, mapping for quantum error-correcting codes that have syndrome measurements. So in this case, it is known that the way to deal with such situations would be to basically repeatedly measure errors and store all the information about the previous measurements. Then the error correction problem can be expressed by such equations where basically we sum all the errors that happened before to the step one, then we have to multiply it with the parity check matrix. Then we have to add the possible error in syndrome, and that will be the syndrome that we will measure. So the syndrome which is measured is on the right-hand side. We could in principle massage this equation and subtract some of those with each other. Then we get such system of equations as written here. And this can be interpreted actually as a classical error correcting code if we treat these additional bits corresponding to syndromes as basically additional bits that were added to the code. So basically then some generalized matrix multiplied by all possible errors on the right, on the left-hand side has to be equal to the syndrome word in the right-hand side. So in principle, that seems to be plausible. However, there is a slight trick here. And the trick is that actually not all errors here are dangerous. And some of the errors that will happen here will be simply cycles. Or like, and it has been known for Tory code that if we have cycles acting on this three-dimensional structure, those are not dangerous. So we need to eliminate the cycles from the consideration. And it turns out that in order to completely solve this problem, we would need to consider a CSS code where we would add this GZ part into consideration. So basically this part that's written here in the way of these linear equations can be represented as such parity check matrix G multiplied by all possible errors that include errors in qubits and errors in syndromes. And the right-hand side vector will be given by syndromes. However, this is not enough for our consideration, and we need to add this extra block matrix GZ, which will eliminate cycles from the consideration. It's easy to check that GX times GZ is zero, so this is, would indeed form a proper CSS code. However, the errors that happen in this code are only Z-type errors. So basically, we are not interested in X-type errors because of the way we constructed these equations. So the good news about this code is that it's still LDPC code, and it's still, by employing the results that we obtained before, we could actually conclude that there will be a finite threshold for such a code. So basically, graphically, this can be represented as if we are putting layers of our quantum error correcting codes one after another, and then we are adding extra qubits corresponding to syndromes, and that would be kind of a graphical representation of such a code, then the connectivity Z that was already discussed before for a general LDPC code, which was basically related to the row weight of the parity check matrix and column weight of parity check matrix of the original code, would change to Z prime, which is slightly bigger compared to original LDPC code, but it's still finite. And in principle, we can conclude that that finite error threshold should exist for such code. And basically, simply by the way it is constructed, this is what we call by space-time code, because in principle, this construction, in order to construct this code, we need a quantum error correcting code as an input and any arbitrary matrix R. However, of course, when we are talking about fault tolerant error corrections, for the matrix R, I would need to take such kind of matrix, which basically has two ones in every row, apart from the very first row. So then just to repeat what I already did with the mapping to Wegener models, I can interpret this as a general quantum CSS error correcting code, and I can map this to a Wegener model. So then, of course, the fault tolerant error threshold would correspond to the Nishimori line, and of course, we would need to map with respect to matrix GZ. Formally, we could also write a spin model for the matrix GX. However, this model in principle will not be directly related to the error, to the fault tolerant threshold. And basically, why we are doing this is that by studying those Wegener models, hopefully we can extract the threshold, the maximum likelihood threshold of such codes, and then that would be basically the maximum achievable threshold for any decoder that can be used on such codes. So basically, another thing that can be done with this code, so in principle, this is, here I'm also talking about mapping for CSS codes, And in this case, as I mentioned before, usually we are getting two spin models, and here one spin model will correspond to mapping for correction of Z errors, and this model will be used for correcting of X errors. And of course, if we apply this to Tori code, then we will get 3D random plaquette gauge model, which is obtained from from GZ. But if we formally also apply this mapping to GX matrix of the Tori code, then we will get the 3D random bone Eisen model. However, for fault tolerant error correction, this model is relevant, which is 3D random plaquette.
I think you didn't quite well explain what is GZ. Can you explain about these cycles again?
So, GX basically corresponds to that equation that we had before. GZ, okay, so I need to eliminate cycles from my code. So E1 times GX, basically, this is it. Kronecker product of these two matrices. What it does, it simply repeats matrix GX again and again. So basically E times GX does the trick of basically placing our quantum codes one after another. Now, of course, there will be cycles that are inside of the plane. And so there will be cycles that are inside of the plane, and those will be eliminated. Wrong direction. Those will be eliminated by this part of the matrix. So basically GX times GZ is zero, and GZ lists all the cycles for the code GX. Now there is additional block, this block in the matrix GZ, and those are cycles that are parallel to the time axis. So in this case, this thing in the case of Tori code would correspond to plaquettes that are parallel to the time axis, and basically it requires, of course, some imagination in order to see that this indeed corresponds to cycles in the...
Let me try to state it, I think it's easier. So suppose you had the syndrome error, and then you had qubit errors for all of the qubits. Sorry, no, it's the other way around. Suppose you had the qubit error, and then all of the syndromes that had that error have error as well. And then the qubit error again. So this error will be invisible. And this error you don't care about. And so this second, you know, this upper row of this second matrix eliminates those.
Yeah.
What do you mean by eliminate?
That's what I mean. You don't care, well, otherwise they will appear in GS.
So it's probably better to understand it like in this,
well,
in the
case. If you treat GX as a classical code, then there will be too many code words. And so there will be some small weight code word that you want to get rid of. And so because the syndrome weight, the stabilizer weight is small, so you have a qubit error, then you have syndrome errors all for the surrounding syndromes, so you measure it wrongly. And then you have qubit error again, so that corrected. And so this is sort of a cluster of errors that would, if, unless you eliminate them from consideration, unless you consider this as a quantum code, these errors will come up as small wave code words.
But the point is that, I mean, this should come out automatically when you do the Z plus one.
This is the construction. This is exactly the second matrix.
Yeah, so if I apply this to Tori code, if I apply it formally to Tori code,
right,
then I will have plaquettes that are within the plane, and I'm just showing which part of the matrix. So this part of the matrix, basically, corresponds to plaquettes that are within the plane. And those are deformations that are not dangerous.
I don't understand, you shouldn't have plaquettes in the plane in the protocol after you've done the D plus one thing. You should only have cubes.
Yeah, but then I need to take the full code, right?
So the statement is, in the sort of the original, the Tori code map is mapped to the gauge Z2 theory, which is three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And this second matrix, you treat it as a gauge symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can say this is a gauge symmetry, or you can say this, you are looking only at the half of the
Yes, but
these are sort of alternative ways.
But because
this is a generalization of that.
So basically this part And this part, simply repetitions of toric layers of toric code, and indeed this GZ automatically takes care of plackets for GX. So if I forget about this part, then E1 times GX will be just repetitions of layers of toric code. Then in order to take all gauges, we need to write here GZ.
But I don't see why you have this repetition of toric code. I mean, the new stabilizer should just be the product of stabilizers at time t and t plus 1. You should never have stabilizers at time t.
No, but basically we still need to run error corrections within the layers too, right? It's just we have additional errors that happen in syndromes. So in order to run error correction within the layers, we need to use matrix JX, right? So we can do error correction of Z errors with the matrix JX. That JX is the original toric code. But we want to eliminate all cycles from toric code. So that's what GZ matrix does, right? So if I, okay, if I write these equations,
yes,
and these all are zeros, then here I will get GX times error equal to syndrome vector. There will be only one equation here, right? GX times error equal to syndrome, right? But this equation will contain these small weight errors corresponding to GZ, so I will have to eliminate it from the consideration. So suppose there are no layers, there is only one layer, then there will be only this equation.
Yeah, I think it's because you disagree because you assume that at the first layer there's something special that happens.
Yeah, the first layer I take the full error. So, but those are in principle boundary conditions, and in principle I don't think those can influence the error threshold, but okay, that's probably an interesting thing to consider. So basically, I was here. So basically, for toric code, such problem has been studied, and in particular for this 3D random plaquette model, the error threshold of 3.3% has been calculated numerically. So basically, now I can also treat these space-time codes as quantum error-correcting codes, and in principle, the input for such construction is an arbitrary quantum error-correcting code described by the parity check matrix H and arbitrary binary matrix R. So basically, then it turns out that the parameters of such quantum error-correcting code can be extracted from the parameters of four codes. The first code A is a classical code defined by the matrix R. Then the second set of parameters is defined by the parity check matrix R transposed. And then there are two quantum error correcting codes, and those are CSS quantum error correcting codes defined as a direct sum of a matrix H and H wave matrix, where H wave matrix is defined as follows. I mean, I probably should have mentioned that before. And basically, you can immediately see that the product of H and H wave matrix is zero. And then there is a transposed CSS code, again, which is defined through H matrix transposed. So then the parameters of such what I call space-time code, the block length is given by this. The number of encoded qubits basically is expressed through this formula and it's given by the number of encoded qubits in the original CSS code and in the original classical code described by this matrix R. And the distance is also bounded for such code, and basically the distance has to be larger than the distances of these four codes. Formally, this construction looks very similar to hypergraph product code construction, and similar bounds happen there. However, there is a difference here, and basically hypergraph product code is constructed from two classical codes, while here we are taking quantum error correcting code and classical error correcting code and constructing the space-time code out of these two codes. So here I would like to outline how some of those results can be obtained. So in particular, the code dimension can be obtained simply by...
Maybe some questions. Yeah. So I don't quite understand, what is the use of defining this general code H? right? So in practice for the Torah code, if you say run
yeah.
one of these codes, you just repeat the sender measurement and you just say, you know, where the sender measurement changes, which corresponds to H being this you know, what you have this pair of check measures, which
yeah.
is closely
yeah.
off the animal. You just check whether the two senders are the
yeah.
same, right?
Yeah.
But you say you use a more general code H. Can you give a concrete example of an H that would be useful? I mean, you would not...
H is any code.
Yeah, but
for
I mean,
example,
I get a record
code.
Of parity check measurements throughout time, right?
Yes.
I repeat my parity check measurements.
So basically...
So what processing would I do that corresponds to particular H?
So H is fixed. H is given by your initial code. R is the one that corresponds how you deal...
Oh, it's maybe R that I need.
Or sorry.
It's the one that is closely, okay.
So there is
R. It was R.
R.
Okay, I was talking about R.
So R,
yes,
R is
why,
what the...
Okay, but
it
you're
is.
Setting up a formalism for general R, right?
Yes, now I'm
but
saying...
Why, is there any use for an R which doesn't look like that? That's what my question is.
I don't know yet, but it's a quantum error correcting code.
Right, because you have a sequence of pair, you know, of sender measurements and then...
Yeah,
the most logical thing would be to check where it starts differing, right? But you're saying there is opportunity for a more general way of processing.
So I'm just saying that I can also construct the full quantum error correcting code because, as I said, the error correction problem would correspond to only one kind of errors present in the system, and that would be Z types of errors acting on such CSS code. Now I'm saying let's treat it as a full quantum error correcting code that experiences all X and Z errors. And then I'm saying what would be asking myself, what would be the parameters of such quantum error correcting code? I mean, in principle, I don't know if there can be some optimizations perhaps by choosing R matrix in a more clever way, maybe I could do better than the repetition code, but.
I mean, maybe also that there are correlations in the syndrome measurements that would between different qubits or design, that would lead to that the other choice of R is better?
Might be, yes, yeah, exactly.
But,
yeah.
Okay, but you don't have a particular reason for doing
it so
general?
Yes, so far, no. So far, I just treat it as a generalization
yes, right.
of a code. But basically, we can calculate the dimension of such code by simply counting the number of linearly dependent rows in matrix GX and GZ. And basically this is done, it can be shown that by considering such products of vectors A and B, actually we could count all the linearly dependent rows in the matrix GX. I will not go into details, but basically what happens is that then we use this formula subtracting the rank of matrices GX and GZ from the number of qubits. And we are, and then after some algebra, one could in principle obtain this formula that the number of encoded qubits in such space-time codes is given through this formula, which is expressed through parameters of the original codes. One interesting conclusion from this is that if KC is equal to zero and KQ is equal to zero, basically if the initial codes that we take into consideration, if classical code does not encode anything, and if the quantum code does not encode anything, then the space-time code does not encode anything either. And this fact is actually useful in order to establish that lower distance bound on this code. And basically here, the idea is to form some reduced code from the original code. So we consider a vector V. Suppose that there is vector V that has a weight larger than this distance D and GX times V is zero. Suppose such vector exists, then what we do, we are basically forming a reduced code where out of matrix H, we are choosing only those columns that are involved in this vector V. And then from that, we can form a reduced code, reduced space-time code where everything will be reduced. Also GX will be reduced and GZ will be reduced. And because the weight of V is less than D, then we actually conclude that KC and KQ has to be zero. So overall, this reduced code will have K equal to zero, which means that all combinations V will have to be combinations of the stabilizer group. So V cannot be a code word for such code. So, okay, this is a very brief outline of the proof, but basically one can show this result. So now I would like to go to some concrete examples. And basically, I will consider a space-time code, which what I call is 1101 code. Why I call it like that? Because it's constructed from a hypergraph product code with two stabilizer generators, this green and red corners. And as you can see here, we have one bit skipped here, so basically 1101. So that's why I call it like that. And basically, it's easy to see that these two stabilizer generators always commute with each other, and all others are formed by simply translations of these two. So then, the space, to give you impression of the space-time code, basically the in-plane plaquettes, what will basically generalize the plaquette construction, will be a plaquette with extra spins added, as it is shown here. Then there will be also a plaquette parallel to the time axis. I did not plot it here, but it will also include extra spin. And basically, it all is contained here. And basically, this part, so to remind you, the Wegener codes mapping, basically the columns here corresponded to bonds, right? So then this vertical, this part of the matrix will correspond to spatial bonds, and because zero is here, those bonds are always lie in plane. So this is, for example, a spatial bond, and then there will be temporal bonds in this part of the matrix, and those will correspond to the plaquettes that are parallel to the time axis. Of course, in principle, the probability of flipping these bonds and these bonds could be different because the errors in the syndrome measurements can happen in principle with different probability. So what's also good here that we could in principle use our order parameter that we introduced before for describing such systems, because in principle, sometimes there is no order parameter for such systems, and in plaquette models, there is no local order parameter. So here are some results of Monte Carlo numerics for such codes, for this particular code, the 1101 code. So what we conclude from these plots that basically we can try to extract the phase diagram. In principle, these calculations are quite expensive. And what I could do only, I could consider the codes of distance 8, 10, and 12. The phase transition seems to be consistent with the first order phase transition. And then as we are getting closer to the multi-critical point, basically we know the exact result that the specific heat has to be finite there. So basically these peaks have to eventually become of the order of to be almost the same. And that kind of also creates a difficulty in establishing the phase diagram, because here close to basically multi-critical point, it becomes very hard to extract the exact structure of the phase diagram here. So perhaps we could directly use this order parameter for such simulations. We are still thinking about it, but basically what we see for this 1101 code is that the threshold should be somewhere around 5%, but basically, and these are the points that we obtained from those specific key calculations. So then also, Leonid already talked about those. We have analytical results, and basically from those results, we can obtain that the phase diagram here below the Nishimori line has to be either reentrant or vertical. And basically, we also obtain that this order parameter kappa has to be 1 in the decodable phase here, and then it has to be less than 1 above the multi-critical point. Okay, and the final subject that I would like to briefly outline here is that in principle, we could actually map the space-time codes to quantum models. Some question? To quantum models. So basically, as I said, I'm considering, I'm not here. So the problem of error correction was mapped to that matrix G, and I can construct the statistical model. And we know that statistical model in principle can be mapped to a quantum model by a weak rotation. And the question is, what will such quantum model be? And actually, it's easy to figure it out. So basically, what we need to do, we need to break time into some small time steps. And then the effective Hamiltonian actually can be calculated from the transfer matrix, which basically describes the evolution of our system. In this case, basically, the temperature would correspond to Planck constant in the quantum model. So such mapping is very well known for anisotropic Ising model, where we have interactions beta along one axis and beta tau along the other interaction. And then basically we write some kind of finite spacing Lagrangian, as this written here, then we could relate the evolution of such system with respect to such Lagrangian with the transfer matrix given by the Hamiltonian formalism, where tau, of course, now becomes continuous. And basically, by comparing these two formalisms, one can immediately write the Hamiltonian, which becomes the quantum Ising model. However, and here we will also have a parameter lambda, and basically the way we, if we want the statistical model to correspond to quantum model, we actually have to maintain some ratio between this beta and beta tau parameter, and in particular beta tau has to go to be very large in order to get tau, the spacing in this tau has to go to zero if we are considering a truly quantum model. So beta tau has to be large, beta has to be small. But basically, overall, this line actually with lambda equal to one can be extended further, and there is such phase diagram for general Ising model. So in principle, the same procedure can be applied to anisotropic Plunket model. And here, again, we would have time-like plockets described by beta tau. And then we will also have beta plockets that are in-plane plockets corresponding to some fixed time. We also know that this model has gauge, which is described by crosses. Here it is plotted, and it's easy to see that such gauge commutes with any of such plucket operators. Then with the use of this gauge, we could actually fix some of the spins that lie between the spatial layers, and we could arrive at such model where only two body interactions will be present between different time layers. And then simply repeating the procedure that was used for toric code, we could arrive at such Hamiltonian. So again, there will be limitation on the spacings that are used here. And finally, this mapping works also for space-time codes. And in particular, here, as I mentioned before, I have spatial part of this matrix G, and I have temporal part of this matrix B. And in particular, what I would like to study with such model is the case when the errors, spatial errors and time errors are asymmetric. And basically, this translates into the model that basically here we will describe all temporal plockets by the coefficient B tau and spatial plockets by the parameter beta. Basically S can be written in the following form, where basically the columns of this matrix, of course, correspond to our generalized bonds. And it turns out that we can actually eliminate, again, some of the spins from the consideration, in particular spins that correspond to this part of the matrix. And this can be done with such gauge matrix. So this gauge matrix, if I apply this construction to toric code, this gauge matrix simply corresponds to plockets that are, corresponds to crosses, to those crosses that I plotted here. So this gauge matrix corresponds to those crosses. It's easy to check that this gauge matrix times this G gives a zero. So by adding this gauge matrix to our spins properly, we could actually put all these spins corresponding to this lower part of the matrix to zero and arrive at such a statistical model where here, as you can see, I have basically spins described by the original quantum error correcting code. Plus, I have interactions between different type layer, time layers. So basically, repeating this, I arrive at such Hamiltonian, where again, lambda parameter relates the beta tau and beta asymmetry in the problem. So what you see here that actually we are simply arrived at sum of all stabilizer generators of the original quantum error correcting code and some external field acting on this Hamiltonian. So basically, we are hoping that by such mapping, perhaps we could study this asymmetry that will inevitably be present here in the original, in this fault-tolerant analysis of our quantum error-correcting codes. So here are the conclusions. So first of all, we are We learned how to map arbitrary quantum error correcting code to Wegener models. In particular, we of course expect that this mapping will be most useful for LDPC codes. It's still a question whether there will be good numerical techniques that will work, for example, for finite rate codes, but it's probably worthwhile looking at that. I also discussed mapping to a problem of fault tolerant error correction in such codes, and these are problems in progress. So, I will leave some time for discussions.
So I have a question. So you define this code G, the space-time code.
Yeah.
So let's say for the Tor code, if you do that, you get a three-dimensional subsystem code.
No, I get a Plunket model, 3D Plunket model. So with
quantum, not as a quantum Hamiltonian.
No, I'm not talking about the quantum Hamiltonian at the end.
So you get, in principle, with errors, with errors, you get a 3D random Plunket gauge model.
No, that's not what I mean. You define a space-time code, right?
Yes.
That is just, you're taking your quantum code,
yeah,
and let's say you have different layers of it, you're going to be in time,
yeah,
and that defines a new code, it's called G.
Yes.
That's a subsystem code, right?
No, it's a proper CSS code. It's a proper CSS code. But what I do in the last part, actually...
No, I don't want to ask about the last part. I want to ask a question whether that code that you define, you'd expect it to have an energy barrier if you see it as a three-dimensional code.
Yes, of course.
This is... Yes?
So you mean...
No.
I take this code and...
It's a space energy code, no.
So say again. So you take this as a Hamiltonian, or...?
Yes, for example, you take it as a Hamiltonian.
If
but you're saying it's just a regular... It is just a stable electric code.
It's a standard stabilizer code,
okay.
So
CSS code.
Because
there are these bubbles, right?
You could have errors which are in the original code. And let's say error happened on layer one, and that will spread and will have...
Well, per se, will still be there.
Right.
Yes.
And then errors in the repetition code, you have syndrome errors every step. And that will...
Yeah, that's also just
right.
It's only at the end.
Right. So,
yes.
So no, that does not...
Okay.
I wonder if you try to generalize this space-time codes to allow possibility of code deformation, then at each time slice you have slightly different code.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting problem to consider, because in principle, we could start. Then that would correspond to using some arbitrary matrix here instead of maybe... or like H would be time dependent, basically. So, but in principle, that's an interesting question, that this space-time code would also evolve in time, and perhaps then we could maybe even do some operations maybe on encoded information. Yeah, that's interesting to consider. So, you have to distinguish. There are several problems kind of put in together. So first of all, if you consider statistical model constructed out of JSIM part of this matrix, that would be a random bond Plunket model, and that would correspond to fault-tolerant error correction. Then you can formally also consider this as a CSS code, which in the case of Tori code would correspond to Plunkets as stabilizer generators of Z-type, and then of X-type you will get... Sorry, no, then you need to treat them in this way. I don't know. You get stars?
Yeah.
because I know what you get vertically. Vertically, this corresponds to a 3D Eisen model, and this corresponds to plaquettes. But if you do like this, rows, I don't know. I haven't thought about that.
More questions? Let me just comment just briefly. So can you show the phase diagram again, the numerical phase diagram? So one, there are a couple differences with the phase diagram. So the numerical one. So you see, in the case of the, if you don't do syndrome errors, those models are also dual. And so the transition zero, P transition happens at 2.3.
Yeah. So this is, of course, not the dual, not right, solved dual model. Yeah.
Let's get back.
Okay.
So this is not solved dual. So yeah. The transition on the vertical axis is at 1.4,
yeah.
Which is different. And then this phase boundary happens at about 5%,
yeah.
Not at 11%.
Yeah, that's
and that's quite robust. So you have a big change compared to the other model.
Yeah. So here, if in language of Tory code, this would correspond to two dual model, three-dimensional Eisen model and plaquette model. So those are dual to each other.
If you want to translate it into the Tory code threshold, you have to divide by the number of the stabilizer measurements that you need to do. So it does go below 1% because here, I guess, the stabilizer weight is bigger.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, it puts it in the ballpark of about 0.5%. But that's with it, you know, assuming that you can do this on local operators.
And you hopefully encode more information.
Right, and compared you can encode much more information in these kind of blocks. So that's, I just wanted to emphasize. Okay. More questions?
Do you hope at 1.2 move to something physical like a 2D array of qubits with nearest neighbor interactions, consider how that's going to increase the complexity of the decoder?
That would be interesting to consider. So you mean how to implement this non-local interaction, and what would be the price to pay for that?
How you would actually choose a technology, choose your favorite technology, but how to build it.
There are some proposals by, I read some papers by Daniel Loss, but they're even proposing some flying qubits. So in principle, for superconducting qubits, you could even send the wire from one qubit
really
to
another.
Yeah.
2D nearest neighbors about the best you're going to get out of most of the conducting architectures.
It's a problem, but that's the only way to get fine linear overhead and not to deal with millions of qubits. So it's a trade-off. I don't know which approach will win. It's hard to say.
Okay.